ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
प्रविष्टकर्णरन्ध्रेण स्वानां भावसरोरुहम् धुनोति शमलं कृष्णः सलिलस्य यथा शरत् Translation, the sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, that is the Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus, flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Such a nice image. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is said that a single pure devotee of the Lord can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. Thus, when it was actually in the confidence of a pure devotee, like Narada or Shukadeva Goswami, and thus is empowered by one spiritual master, as Narada was by Brahmaji, can not only deliver himself from the clutches of Maya or illusion, but can deliver the whole world by his pure and empowered devotional strength. The comparison to the autumnal rain that falls on muddy reservoirs of water is very appropriate. During the rainy season, all the waters of the rivers become muddy. But in the month of July, August, the autumn season, when there is a slight rainfall, the muddy waters of the rivers all over the world become at once clear. By addition of some chemical, a small reservoir of water, like that of a metropolitan waterworks tank, can be cleared. But by such a tiny effort, it is not possible to clear up all the reservoirs of water like the rivers. The powerful, pure devotee of the Lord, however, can deliver not only his personal self, but also many others in his association. Paragraph. In other words, the cleansing of the polluted heart by other methods, like the culture of empiric knowledge or mystic gymnastics, can simply cleanse one's own heart, but devotional service to the Lord is so powerful that it can cleanse the hearts of the people in general by the devotional service of the pure empowered devotee. A true representative of the Lord, like Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, etc., can deliver all people by their empowered devotional service. Next paragraph. By sincere efforts to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, one realizes his constitutional relationship with the Lord in the transcendental humor of servitude or friendship, or parental affection, or conjugal love, and by such self-realization one becomes situated at once in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Not only were all the pure devotees like Narada self-realized souls, but they were engaged in preaching work automatically by spiritual impetus, and thus they delivered many poor souls entangled in the material modes. They became so powerful because they sincerely followed the Bhagavatam principles by regular hearing and worshipping. By such actions, the accumulated material dusts, etc., lusts, accumulated material lusts, etc., became cleansed by the personal endeavor of the Lord within the heart. The Lord is always within the heart of the living being, but he becomes manifested by one's devotional service. Last paragraph. Purification of the heart by culture of knowledge or mystic yoga may be all right for the time being for an individual person, but it is like the cleansing of a small quantity of stagnant water by chemical processes. Such clarification of water may stand for the time being and the sediments settle down, but by slight agitation everything becomes muddy. The idea is that devotional service to the Lord is the only method of cleansing the heart for good, whereas other methods may be superficially good for the time being. There is a risk of becoming muddy again due to agitation of the mind. Devotional service to the Lord with specific attention or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and always is the best recommended method for liberation from the clutches of illusion. Such a beautiful image and such an important message. Pravishta karnarandrena svanam bhava saroruham dhunoti shamalam krishnaha salilasha yata sharat. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, namely the Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the ear of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus, it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Narada speaking, describing the process of the hearing process portion of devotional service, and these types of descriptions I find to be like the most intimate and exciting messages of the science of devotional service, where the reciprocation that Krishna gives to the devotee when the devotee is sincerely trying. What does Krishna feel and what does Krishna do? What is that? We often hear about, you know, from our side, what does the devotee do towards Krishna? But when there's disclosure, what does Krishna do in his relationship with his devotee? It's really confidential. The most confidential portion of the most confidential knowledge. The message specifically is that it's the sound vibration when one extends oneself regularly and with sincerity and with the strong desire to assimilate the message, Krishna enters, sits on the lotus of one's relationship with him, and he, in the form of that sound vibration, cleanses. Where we can't because it's his energy and it's under his control. and whatever we may try, too bad, because he's in charge of it. And you might, get out, and you won't go out. But if Krishna says, go out, it's out. Just like that. Because it's under his control. And it's like the question that Raj was asking last night, only in reverse. What role does Krishna play in bad things of this world? Turn it around. What role does Krishna play in removing the bad things of this world? It's all under his control, and he's reciprocating according to our desire and our deserve. And there's rules in the material side, the forgetfulness of Krishna side. There's rules. You act deliberately ignoring him, and then there's consequences. You can blame him for the consequences, but you can blame yourself for the having to bear the consequences, because there's free will choices and there's rules. And what about the fact that innocent people get hurt? Are they innocent? And for that matter, are they hurt? Because from the spiritual perspective, it's just a dream. One dream intersects another dream, and is it fair? But it's just a dream, and yes, it's fair. And that's because there's rules. And one who takes shelter of Krishna ends the dream. And then there's the transit lounge phase, where you're leaving one place and entering into the next place. And that's called the practice of devotional service. But one can, in that practice of devotional service, one has to learn that the dream is but a dream and reality is reality, and stay with reality. And tolerate the dream. Tolerate the actions and reactions of the material energy, and don't invest merit and value and expectations in the dream should be nice while I'm in the transit lounge. It's the process itself is very powerful, and there is the process acts even if we don't have faith, but the process acts more effectively the more we have faith, because the more we'll invest consciousness in the reality. That's from the previous verse that we discussed yesterday morning. Nice understanding. Shrindatak Shraddhaya Nityam. It connects with everything that has happened previously, because the fact, so it's, this is a summary point within the flow of this canto. This is a summary point, because Maharaj Pariksit has asked, what is it that one should hear, chant, and remember? So in that hearing, with faith, Shrinvata Shraddhaya Nityam, then a few more qualifiers, Grinitas Cha Svacheshtitam. This is a recap from yesterday, but there's a sense of dutifully doing the things that you should do, and that promotes goodness, and it slackens or eliminates reactions for past misdeeds. Just like Krishna's indication of how does firm determination in devotional service take place. When one when one when one's life is made up of pious activities and the sinful activities are practically eliminated, and one rises above identifying oneself with the dualities of life, then devotional service can be firm and fixed with great determination. Yesham tvandagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandam moha nirmukta vajante mam vridhavrata. But there's something on this other side. There's the very slow, gradual progression system of spiritual culture, and then there's the direct devotional Bhagavat Dharma method, the elevator method compared to the stairway method, step by step by step, or just get in the elevator and up you go. And this Bhagavat Dharma method is that elevator method. What's required, who is eligible for to getting on the elevator for engagement in devotional service? It's something deep inside, a sincere desire for a genuine relationship with Krishna, and a willingness, just like the person that goes up the steps, a willingness to pay the price, and to pay the price of entering into devotional service is a willingness to let go of unwanted things, like Maharaj Parikshit, let go of his kingdom, let go of his position, let go, whatever the, engage in his position, let go of his position, whatever is required for devotional service. Wasn't a better man after renouncing his kingdom than when he was the king. If it were so, then we just have to give things up and we're better. But it's not. It's the expectation of finding happiness in things of this world that has to be given up. And instead, the expectation of happiness in being in one's relationship with Krishna. And the process of hearing, we're being instructed by Narada, excuse me, by Maharaj Parikshit, that the process of hearing, as the elevator, rapidly carries one to that position. And so that's the statement from the previous verse. Bhagavan Vishate Hridi, very quickly, the personality of God, it becomes manifest within one's heart. And it's all of a sudden, Kalina Nati Dhirgena, just like Narada was describing to Vyas when he sat underneath the large banyan tree and was just a small boy, just meditating like the great sages had told him. All of a sudden, the Supreme Lord appeared within his heart. Like that happened with Dhruva, all of a sudden. Then he appeared before him. And that vision within his heart disappeared, and startled, he opened his eyes, and there he was in front of him. It wasn't like an imagination, it was manifesting in different features. So, Krishna is within our hearts too. Krishna is within the hearts of demons. Krishna is within the hearts of insects. Krishna is within the heart of every living entity. And wanting to be very conscious of that relationship with the Supreme Lord, that spark combined with the hearing process, it's very effective. That's what this verse is saying. Krishna Karna Randrina Svanam Bhava Sarodham. He enters within the ear, sits within the lotus flower of one's relationship with him within the heart, and seeing the sincere aptitude of the devotee to be in that relationship with him, he removes the coverings and shows himself, which is quite merciful and absolutely merciful. And it's something that one cannot accomplish without this divine descending mercy, divine intervention, they use the phrase. He's willing to divinely intervene. We're not. And to help prepare ourselves to want sufficiently, the little bit of desire needs to be applied in a very careful way to the process that he's spelling out. Here it is. You want. Here's the process. And when he sees the sustained effort over time, then the gradual, and then sudden showing himself to his devotee, or letting the devotee recognize this reciprocation that Krishna wants to extend to us, here it is. So it's not, in other words, it's not our own effort that makes spiritual advancement happen, although our own effort is necessary. It's the of these transcendental potencies of Krishna, it's his mercy potency. It's really a wonderful message. In the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a passage that our acharyas often quote where Durvas Muni goes being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra. He goes to Brahma, he goes to Lord Shiva. Help me, help me, help me. And they send him to Lord Vishnu. When they come to Lord Vishnu, he says, there's nothing I can do. I'm helpless. Because I'm subservient to the will of my devotee. And it's naturally so. For my devotee, I am everything to him. And so, he captures me by that love, and he's everything to me. For my devotee, I'm everything to him, and that puts me in the position where I'm everything to him, or he's everything to me. And so, without his wishing something, I can't do anything. We have to go to Maharaj Ambarish. If he says okay, then it's done. If he doesn't say okay, you're finished. Because in the heart of my devotee, there's nothing there but me. And so in my heart, there's nothing in my heart but my devotee. And this is a deep mystery. Because he's a supremely independent entity. He's not dependent. We're dependent, and he's totally independent. And there's nobody but him that's totally independent. And with that fullness of his total independence, he places himself dependent on the desire of his devotee. So if the desire of the devotee is, let my heart become pure, then what this verse is describing takes place. And if we want to become pure with the exception of this, that, and the other thing that we're holding on to, then you know the difficulty is not in the process, the difficulty is in our attachments for independent enjoyment. We want, and our wants are mixed. so much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for me. And then with that mix, then there's not full shelter. Just hearing Prabhupada speak this. When one surrenders to Krishna, thinking, perhaps Krishna won't remember me, so I better put something on the side. Just in case Krishna doesn't. And that's not surrender. Surrender means full trust. And when that is fully extended, Krishna's reciprocation is fully there. And, you know, we're not accustomed to that. We're accustomed to our own prowess. We're accustomed to the mentality of a fruitive worker. It's my effort, it's my labor that's generating my sustenance. It's my effort that's generating my protection. It's my effort that's generating my progress. And we're told it over and over again and rewarded over and over again in the material spheres of life. So the Bhagavatam is wanting to awaken us to another reality. And so a couple things that Prabhupada repeats, so worth repeating his words. Other processes may, to a degree, temporarily eliminate the influence of our past misdeeds. And so there's two things that are being said here. One is that while they may do so, it's oneself becomes benefited and not simultaneously others become benefited. In distinction, the process of devotional service is where oneself becomes benefited and simultaneously others become benefited. By the very nature of the qualities of devotion, awaken the quality of compassion. And also one knows how to deliver, and has the spiritual potency to deliver that same benefit to others, at least to extend it to be offered to them. And the temporarily benefited circumstance is then compared to the removing stuff from a tank of water, but it just temporarily does so, or settles it in a separated state, but when agitated again, it mixes and becomes disturbed. And we have that experience from whether it's knowledge or some type of austerity or penance. This is a theme in the whole of the Bhagavatam. The knowledge is insufficient because if the tendencies in the heart remain, like the core tendency is looking for happiness apart from Krishna. You can check a certain manifestation of that through knowledge. But the tendency of seeking enjoyment apart from Krishna is still there. And even in that particular brand of, or variety of seeking enjoyment, like, you know, something that we know that we shouldn't do, so we check that something by knowledge. But the pressure becomes enough, we'll do it anyway. Our practical lives demonstrate that. The knowledge alone is not enough, while knowledge is good. And I was visiting in Seattle, and there's one young man that has become a devotee at the My Sweet Lord Cafe. Very interesting concept. Microsoft, Boeing, and Intel, I think the third one is Intel, they have their national headquarters there. So they have matching grants. You give something from your income, you're an employee, and they'll give matching dollars for charitable work. But they won't give it for religious, but they'll give it for charitable. After haggling with the companies, finally they formed a separate not-for-profit charity. The State of Washington, blah, 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 Inc. So the employees give their contributions to that charity, and Microsoft and Boeing gives their matching, and now they have a vegetarian cafe that's for free, paid for 50% by Bill Gates and his friends. So, and the devotees themselves volunteer to do that job. You know, they run the place. And so one person has come there that's and it's right near the university. Good spot to have a free vegetarian cafe. So he's become a devotee, and I met him. He's been practicing Buddhist for something like 5 years, and he has the intensity of a serious practicing Buddhist. He's intense, but very nice. And we had this discussion about how he took interest in Krishna consciousness, and he said, "Well, I'm a student. I was, you know, free vegetarian food for a Buddhist. Great." So I started going, and you know, the first attraction was the free vegetarian dinner, and then after that, you know, I became attracted to chanting, because I have this 2-hour discipline every day. But and he said it like 5 times in the conversation. But from that discipline, my heart just became hard. My heart just became hard. Not just dry, but hard. And then from chanting, so I thought, I really like chanting, and I like the prasadam, and I like, you know, I like the whole thing, so I'll replace this thing that I was doing for 2 hours with chanting, and my heart became soft. And in that soft condition, that I was able to understand the classes and the discussions on Bhagavad Gita, whereas before, it just hit my hard heart. Didn't penetrate. So, the Bhagavatam's message and the process of chanting side by side, they penetrate through that covering and remove the covering. And the capacity to do so is at once or gradual, depending upon how attached we are to that little covering. That sense of the spirit of independent enjoyment from Krishna, problem, that which brings us to the material world to begin with. How much we hold on to that makes it, the pace of advancement, the speed of advancement, the rate of cleansing will be somewhat retarded, slowed down. Now supposing somebody like obstinately holds on while chanting, then Krishna has some special programs for those people. He gets a sledgehammer out. Pow! Ooh. Ooh. That's when Krishna is especially kind. But the cleansing, dhunoti shamalam, Krishna, it's like, you know, Krishna becomes Arjuna's chariot driver, and Krishna becomes the hearer of the Bhagavatam's janitor. He just cleans up this dirty heart. Kind of. He doesn't get a dustpan and a broom, he just turns on the light, and it dissipates the darkness. Because what is darkness but the absence of light? So the darkness of ignorance. He says the same thing, but the poetic image is different in the Bhagavad Gita. Jnana dipena vasvata. I destroy the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. And Krishna personally does it. It's very intimate, very confidential. He personally does it. We don't do it. He personally does it. He personally cleanses the heart of this contamination in the heart of one who is this eager person, eager, ardent hearing. Prabhupada uses the phrase. Not just for assimilating the science, like, you know, if you get it down, you can spout it back. Not the academic approach, but the devotional approach. I want to make my life like this. I want to hear very attentively so that I can enter into that kind of a life with full dependence upon Krishna, full devotion to Krishna, and no whining and complaining. Why does it have to be like this? It's that's our attachment to cuckoo land over here. To a life of independence. And we want it to be like this and like that. And we want, you know, Krishna to sit straight and, you know, do what we want him to do. Very foolish. So the two points that are repeated in the purport are that by the process of devotion, not only oneself but others simultaneously will benefit. And the second point is that it's not just temporarily but permanently things are eradicated. That is to say, when we are in that relationship with Krishna, the light is always on. And there's commitment to a relationship, to that relationship with Krishna, circumstances are inconsequential. The relationship is not based upon contractual deals. You do this and I'll do that. You violate the contract, I'm going elsewhere. It's not a business deal with Krishna. It's a unconditional loving relationship with Krishna. Krishna, you can do with me as you like. Trusting, of course, Krishna is all merciful. So if Krishna puts one through an ordeal, it's not that Krishna has violated the contract. It's Krishna's intensifying our loving relation. When Krishna placed himself in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, What a desperate situation for the residents in Vrindavan. It's a role reversal. Normally they're in difficulty and Krishna come and help, but what to do when Krishna is in difficulty? They're helpless. There are several pastimes in Vrindavan where all the residents of Vrindavan in different rasas came together at once and were experiencing simultaneously like a crescendo of their particular relationship with Krishna, unabashed and unseparated. The rasas that Krishna would excite normally would be of a particular kind, with the cowherd boys, or with the cows, or with the gopis, or with his parents, with his friends. Some rasas, some leelas, all the rasas at once. And this leela is particularly wonderful because amongst the Leelas, here Krishna's in difficulty. And they're completely dependent upon Krishna with their life and soul. Now Krishna's in difficulty. They're ready to give up their life. Mad. Jump in the Jamuna River and drown in the poisonous water. What's the use of life? And Krishna stayed in that position for hours. Well, imagine what happened to their feelings. Then, okay, that's enough. Because their feelings became intensified and intensified. They slipped out of the coils of Kaliya and swam around Kaliya, making him dizzy. Krishna was swimming so swiftly. And then jumped on his hoods and began dancing to the delight of the residents of Vrindavan. So much having fun, the demigods came and played their drums and music, and to the music Krishna was dancing. The best of all dancers, the original dance artist, Krishna, subduing the pride of Kaliya, smashing. Till his envy was all gone. He surrendered. What a beautiful leela. The wives came forward, pushed their children forward. Krishna's mood, you know, here's little children, Krishna, inducing a certain mood and then offering their wonderful prayers, glorifying Krishna. He accepted their prayers. He accepted the surrender of Kaliya. Kaliya offered his prayers. And Krishna said, you have to leave now. Go back to Ramanaka Lake. Leave the river Jamuna alone. And so he left. And instantly the trees came back to life and the foliage came back to life. Krishna came out of the water, cold, because he's been in the water a long time. And, you know, they didn't, like the Kaliya, they didn't worship him. They just embraced him and, Krishna, you're back. Come on, let's go play with the cows. What a wonderful, you're so wonderful. Let's go. And on to the next leela where Krishna swallowed the forest fire. Just, what a wonderful, endless varieties of exchange of loving relation with Krishna. And it's not, anyway, it's not fairy tale, it's Krishna. It's Krishna's loving exchange with just inconceivable sweetness and kindness upon the devotees and all others who are introduced into the leela for their purification also. Nalakuvara and Manigriva and Kaliya and Putana and the host of personalities that Krishna is exhibiting his super excellent kindness. And for us, that kindness comes in the form of this process of hearing about the wonderful Krishna. And it acts in a very wonderful way. And here, in the Bhagavatam, it's being revealed how it acts. Not exactly the technology, but what's going on in this hearing process. Krishna goes right through the coverings, right to the very seat of our loving relation with Him. And remove the covers. And our natural feelings of love and devotion show themselves once again. We feel like healthy and normal and the way things should be. Just from this hearing process, when it's properly taken up. Okay, any discussion?
Maharaj, so Kaliya Krishna was the only demon that was not killed by Lord Krishna or
no.
Lord Balaram.
No, like the snake that was swallowing Nanda, Krishna just put his foot on his head and released the condemned soul. Stop and think if there are others that were relieved but not killed. I'm sure there were. Krishna provided, like with the washerman, Krishna provided the same, it was practically the same words that he spoke to the washerman as he spoke to the florist. And it's just, you know, a different response. Of course, the washerman lost his life. But the approach that Krishna made was not, you know, confrontation. It was very sweet. And the washerman reacted differently.
Guru Maharaj, King Indra, will he come in that category where someone was spared by
a demon? He wasn't a demon, though. What he did was demoniac, but he's not in the category of a demon.
Was he put under Yogamaya potency to do that, or it was his pride?
His pride. Excessive pride. Yeah.
Can you kindly elaborate on that phrase that Krishna sits on the lotus flower of his relationship with us? Okay, in the
it can be taken as a poetic metaphor. Seems to be the way that it's being used. Bhava Saroruham. Bhava, Prabhupada has translated as constitutional relationship. Sara Ruham, the lotus flower of one's constitutional relationship. Svanam Bhava Saroruham. And in the translation, the sound incarnation enters into the heart of the self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship. It seems it's a metaphor.
Okay.
A little bit off the topic. When we try to accomplish something in our lives, okay, we have a plan and we want to do this or that, and then difficulties pretty much with everything what we want to do. At what is the determining point where we should give up our endeavor to get certain arrangement or
when
situation?
The standard that our scriptures teach us, when it's an over-endeavor, like it's just too much endeavor for a simple thing. Now, the exception is when there's a very clear indication that is wanted. Guru or Krishna want. Mm-hmm. And we go on endeavoring. Like, as an example in Prabhupada's life, the securing of the Juhu temple and building of the Vrindavan temple and things like that. So, the devotees endeavored because Prabhupada gave the indication. Even they were trying to persuade Prabhupada, it's too much complicated. It's an over-endeavor. Doesn't seem that Krishna wants. Prabhupada knew that Krishna wanted and he dug in. So, if one has some direct pipeline to Krishna and Krishna tells you, I want this, then that's one standard. Not an over-endeavor. But in normal circumstances, that's not the case. And like, let's say, in Krishna's service, I'd like to do blah, blah, blah. You make necessary arrangements and it's not happening. You continue persevering into a certain point. It's not intended to happen. At least, like, Chitraketu not having a son. He should have, at a certain point, just recognized it's not Krishna's plan. So, in ordinary things, you make appropriate arrangements and continue to do so, and if it doesn't fructify, then it's fine with me. When there's a clear statement of mission, then we relentlessly continue.
We find in this particular episode that this hearing process in itself is sufficient to generate realization for devotees like Parikshit Maharaj. But in normal circumstance, like when we involve ourselves in preaching activity, there is a big delay between that hearing process and then that practical application to happen. So, what I'm asking is that...
I'm not sure I understand the statement that you made, because I don't think I necessarily agree with it, if I understood it. There's a delay in what?
So...
efforts and the results of those efforts?
Okay, I'm basically referring to Bhagavad Gita, where it is clear that that knowledge will come from devotional service. Now, when we involve ourselves in different preaching activities, we are just disseminating knowledge. Not so much like they are practicing in their lives to trigger that transformation of heart.
Well, everybody has to begin somewhere.
Okay.
I wouldn't go so far as to say there's no transformation. They're beginning somewhere. They're taking their academic acumen and applying it to devotional service, which doesn't work. But, that's part of purification, to realize I have to have another approach. They made exceptional persons. I get it. Get the understanding. I need another paradigm. just from hearing it. Most people won't, they'll have to experience it. And even some people that experience it don't get it, but it's just, it's not to say there's no purification. It's a gradual process depending upon the submission that one extends to the process.
Guru Maharaj, while discussing Kaliya last time, you talked about, mentioned envy. That triggered a question. I recognize that I have a lot of envy in the heart towards many devotees, especially those that are senior, more advanced. So, what can I do to eliminate that from the heart?
Now, listening to Prabhupada's lectures is very wonderful. Just yesterday, Prabhupada was addressing, we must understand what is envy. He said it three times. We must understand what is envy. And he placed it in a very simple frame, definition. Somebody has, and I want that which somebody has. I wish them to not have it. Because if they have it, I don't have it. So it's like, you know, it's a limited commodity that's out there, and somebody else has it, I can't have it. I don't want them to have it. Behind that envy of the person is envy of Krishna, because Krishna has it. If I can give up my envy towards Krishna, I can give up my envy towards others. My envy towards others is but a manifestation of my envy towards Krishna. So, that's the root. And if you pull the root, you can pull the whole weed. And just clip the top of the weed and it looks okay, but the weed grows back because the root is still there. So, best is to address at the very root. And the very root is acknowledging Krishna's position. It's his, constitutionally. I can't make it mine. It's his. And I'm happy to be in the position of Krishna's servant, and then there's submission. So that's what Kaliya did. Kali is submitted, but he got bashed while Krishna was dancing because he's the supreme heavy. The acharyas described his heads were smashed beyond recognition, pulverized, because Krishna's feet are heavy. So, better to by the process of hearing to acknowledge Krishna's supremacy and surrender to Krishna. And by surrendering to Krishna, that envy is gone. Krishna, like, you know, the light comes on, the darkness is gone. The problem with envy is we don't want to surrender to Krishna. We want the goods. We want the opulences. We want to enjoy the opulences of Krishna, at least to some extent. And different people have different ambitions, but so recognize what the real problem is and surrender to Krishna. That approach is the root cause approach. And you go down a couple of steps, and it's, if there's envy towards another, then you do the opposite, you praise the other. You bring from your heart, you bring acts of service to those others. And especially along with envy goes pride, do so in such a way that you're not looking for recognition from that person or from others, just quietly going about doing service. With the prayerful mood, let this dirt of pride leave my heart, and for envy. And Krishna will recognize. So, you know, Krishna doesn't have to dance on your hoods. Krishna can just cleanse your heart and subdue that envious nature. It's actually, you know, envy diametrically opposes that which can help us advance, because if it's those who are somewhat advanced and there's envy in the heart, then I can't take the benefit from those persons. I distance Maya completely. I distance myself from that which can help me the most with an attitude. And, you know, an ill attitude towards that person. Totally Maya, keeping one away from that which can be of greatest value to me. It's really a nasty trick of mine. So, spiritual life, Prabhupada said, means declaring war against Maya. Maya, there's the door. Wait a minute, I'm in charge here. Been in charge, but now I'm inviting you out. And one way, don't come knocking on the door again. What? Wait a minute, this is rude. There's the door. I've had enough. Just declare defiance in that. It's not, envy is not who we really are. It's foreign. And now let me take up peacefully the right mood, the devotional mood. And to a degree, it takes that strong assertion, like, you know, of course, we can't do it alone. We require Krishna's spiritual strength. And there, these pastimes that Krishna performs in Vrindavan, they're very instructive. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches that by hearing and by contemplating these pastimes, the potencies of Krishna remove these very shortcomings from our own heart. Kaliya representing envy. To meditate on Krishna's removing envy by meditating on the wonderful leela of Krishna's removing envy. And the potencies for that tendency in one's own heart become removed. It's very sweet. Very wonderful and very effective. Such a nice pastime. Krishna, Prabhupada Jaya.